Hello again, and welcome to Security.com's Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, September 13th, 2006. I'm Bill Brenner. This week, Microsoft and Cisco execs acknowledge the limits of their NAC-NAP interoperability roadmap. Spy Dynamics' Michael Sutton talks about this month's Microsoft patches in this week's Security Spotlight, and two of the men behind last year's Zotab attack get jail time. But first, our top story. Apple Computer and Adobe warned Tuesday that attackers could exploit serious security holes in QuickTime and Flash Player to run malicious code on targeted machines. But the vendors have updated the popular multimedia applications to fix the flaws. Apple said QuickTime versions prior to 7.1.3 are susceptible to multiple flaws caused by the application's failure to properly bounds check and sanitize user-supplied data. An attacker can exploit these issues to execute arbitrary code on the targeted computer, Apple said in an advisory. Symantec warned in an email to customers of its DeepSight threat management service that proof-of-concept exploit code is available for one of the QuickTime flaws. Apple has released QuickTime version 7.1.3 to address the vulnerabilities. Meanwhile, Adobe said Flash Player is susceptible to multiple remote code execution vulnerabilities because the application fails to properly bounds check user-supplied input before copying it into insufficiently sized memory buffers. Adobe said attackers could exploit the problem by creating a media file with large, dynamically generated string data and submitting it to be processed by the media player. This will cause the application to overwrite system memory and an explicit location, Adobe said. Because of this, race conditions, heap overflows, and stack overflow vulnerabilities may be possible and would allow remote attackers to run malicious code on the targeted machine. Adobe recommends users upgrade to version 9.0.16.0 to fix the flaws. In other news, 2 years after pledging to work together on a joint network access control architecture, Microsoft and Cisco Systems last week delivered on their promise, unveiling a roadmap for an interoperable NAC solution. But executives from both companies admit the roadmap is a long one. And while it does weave together elements of each company's NAC offering, thus giving customers some flexibility, it doesn't offer much hope if you're managing a non-Windows or non-Cisco environment. The architecture itself is a hybrid, comprising elements of Microsoft's Network Access Protection and Cisco's Network Admission Control solutions. It relies heavily on the use of Cisco routers and switches, as would be expected, and will be incorporated into Microsoft's Longhorn server, scheduled for release in the second half of 2007. The system will be offered to a limited number of beta customers later this fall, but Cisco and Microsoft officials said customers should not anticipate a lot of bells and whistles when they deploy the joint solutions. The choices are, in fact, limited to Cisco or Microsoft components. The companies plan to license some of the proprietary protocols they developed to third-party vendors, and Cisco's standalone NAC solution does provide support for non-Windows devices. But the joint architecture is designed to run best on Cisco networking gear and Windows systems. Officials from the two companies acknowledged that many enterprises may opt for other NAC solutions as a result. But they also made it clear that the work their companies did on the NAC-NAP solution is not the end of their cooperation or of efforts that could benefit a wider group of people. And now for this week's Security Spotlight. Microsoft released its monthly patch update Tuesday, fixing flaws in Microsoft Office and Windows. Unlike recent months, where Microsoft has released up to a dozen updates at once, September's load is a lighter one. Nevertheless, one of the updates is critical, and IT administrators may have some questions about the latest threats. Joining me to talk about this is Michael Sutton, Security Evangelist for Spy Dynamics. Mike, welcome to Security Wire Weekly.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Mike, for IT administrators who are evaluating the latest threats, what is the single biggest issue they should be focusing on this morning?
Well, the short answer to that is always, it depends. The quick, easy to general rule of thumb is aim for the criticals. But you should always back up a bit and ensure that you do an appropriate risk assessment for your own environment, because just simply because a vendor relates something as critical, that means it's critical in a generic sense in most people's environments. It doesn't mean it's going to be critical in yours. This particular release of advisories gives us an important example of that. If you take a look at MS06052, which the title of that one is Vulnerability in Pragmatic General Multicast to Allow Remote Code Execution, that's only rated as an important. However, if you have Windows XP machines that are running MSMQ, the service in question, then you're very exposed. This is a vulnerability which requires no authentication, and if you had machines exposed to that, that would be for you, that would be a critical vulnerability. Now, in most cases, that's not going to be the situation for most people, simply due to the fact that that particular service is not enabled by default. So most people are not going to be in that situation, but it illustrates the example that you really need to step back and take a look at your own environment before you dive in and do the patching. So for most people, to answer your question, the most critical situation is going to be 054. That one is yet another file format vulnerability, this time in Publisher. Fortunately, Publisher is not something that's installed in most machines, like a Word or Excel would be, but it's still a significant vulnerability. Microsoft has been absolutely plagued with file format vulnerabilities, whether they be in media files such as pictures, video, or Office documents, Word, Excel, in this case Publisher. And the danger of those files and the danger of that type of vulnerability is those sorts of files are very freely traded over the Internet. That's the whole idea of the Internet, to trade documents and videos and things of that nature. So your firewalls probably are not going to block Publisher files because people in your company need to do work. It's a business, so you need for them to be able to trade document files. And all that this particular vulnerability takes is a malformed Publisher file that can then cause the exploit. One thing that I think people get confused with on file format vulnerabilities is they assume that the vulnerability is in the file itself. That file is not executable. It is just a file. The actual vulnerability lies in Publisher, the program which is interpreting that file. But this to me seems like a fairly flaky protocol. One of the things that I did last night was fuzz that particular format, where I take just a good Publisher file and programmatically mangle it and see what happens. And I found literally dozens of crashes within the application. So the bad news is that I don't think this is the last that we'll see of file format vulnerabilities in this particular protocol.
But in this particular case, it doesn't appear to be as wormable as, say, the Windows Server Service flaw that generated a lot of attention in August.
Yeah, correct statement there. So I mentioned the dangers of file format vulnerabilities in that they're very freely traded. But even though they tend to be favorites of malicious code writers because of the fact that they're traded, they don't lend themselves to a fast-spreading worm because human intervention is involved. You mentioned the server service. That's a case where there's a service running, it's exposed, and a worm can take advantage of that, and there's no human being's intervention required. In this case, somebody has to actually obtain a file, whether it be emailed to them or they are social engineered to go to a website and download and open it. But that process has to take place. So you're not going to see a fast-spreading worm with this, which is definitely a strong mitigating factor for that type of scenario.
Sure. Now let me ask you, this was a pretty light patch load compared to what we've seen, what we saw in August and in July and in June. In fact, it seems Microsoft has patched more this year than it did in the previous 2 years combined. You know, that's not a down to a mathematical science, but there has been a lot more by way of patching this year compared to what we've seen in recent years. Is the software giant simply getting better at finding and addressing flaws, or is this a matter of that they're getting bombarded a lot more with reports of flaws from the outside researchers?
Well, my initial reaction was the same as I'm sure what everyone else's was when they woke up yesterday and took a look at the patches, was, wow, they're taking a break on us, because we've had three brutal months. June, July, and August were really heavy. There was, I believe, 12, 7, and 12 advisories in those months, respectively, and that doesn't reflect the number of vulnerabilities that were in those. I believe we actually got over 20 vulnerabilities in one. So those were three of the heaviest months that we've ever seen. And so it certainly looks like they're taking a break. Microsoft used to, I don't know if it was planned or if it just worked out this way, but there used to be this cycle of a heavy month followed by a light month, heavy month, light month. And they obviously went away from that in the past 3 months when we absolutely got bombarded. And now it looks like they're just kind of taking a break. I would not read any more into this other than, those 3 months were hard for them, just as they were hard for the people that were patching, and now they're catching up. And evidence of that is that the queues of other researchers that I know are still pretty heavy in terms of vulnerabilities. I know my friends at iDefense have a lot of vulnerabilities in the queue. Tipping Point Zero Day Initiative, they actually publicly state what they have in their queue, but they only give the vendor name. And I took a look this morning. They show 7 Microsoft vulnerabilities in their queue.
Right.
So I think this was just a cleanup, catch-up month. Actually, if you look at the researcher who did the file format vulnerability, the publisher file, actually released his own third-party advisory. And in there, he stated that had actually been reported to Microsoft 402 days ago. So that would suggest to me that this is old one that they're now getting to. It's a little bit concerning if indeed it did take 402 days, because that is certainly an excessive amount of time for any amount of regression testing to take place. But if you believe the researcher, that's what he's saying. So in my opinion, this is nothing more than a cleanup month. Take advantage of it and buckle down, because I'm sure next month will be another biggie.
And also worth noting that there are still some unpatched flaws that we do know of out there that have been actively exploited, including most recently a flaw in Microsoft Word. So here you are, you're an IT administrator. This is a lighter month as far as patch deployment goes, but talk about some of the specific things they could be doing to better lock down their systems against the expanding zero-day threats that we've been seeing in recent months, most recently, the Word flaw.
You bet. So the example you bring up really illustrates the fact that you cannot predict what's coming in the future. You know, you're fooling yourself if you think, oh, if I just do this one simple thing, I'm going to be protected. Zero-day is zero-day. You don't know what it's going to be. It's going to take you by surprise. We've also seen examples in recent months of patches introducing new vulnerabilities, and unfortunately, that's a reality of the game as well. So the key, in my opinion, is not to focus on any one thing, any one type of patch, any one type of threat. You have to assume that it's all out there and that it's all coming. I would take advantage of this time to focus on a defense in depth strategy. Make sure that your machines and your network is as locked down as possible, so that when these vulnerabilities come out, they don't have the opportunity to hit you. O52, the one that I mentioned earlier in the PGM service, is a great example of that. If you were running a machine that did indeed have the vulnerable service running on it, you would be very exposed. But if your firewalls were preventing the outside world from getting to that particular service, even though you'd be exposed internally, you're not exposed externally, which is obviously going to greatly reduce the risk posed by that. Even going beyond that, maybe that service that you're running only needs to be within a certain part of the company, so you could have the network more locked down to ensure that only certain areas are getting it. Mm-hmm. Point being, that was a zero day from your perspective. It came out, you didn't know about it, but you can limit your exposure by only allowing as much access as is required for you to do your business. The second thing that I would suggest to people is use this as an opportunity to proactively go back and scan your network, scan your environment, scan your web apps to ensure that these patches have appropriately been applied. People often make the mistake of saying, well, we have a policy that patches get applied. I've seen the sign-off. I know that this was done. That's not enough. You need to be double-checking that process. I mean, you need the process, the people, and the tools, but you can't rely on things. Things can go wrong. Somebody can make a mistake when they apply a patch. Somebody can disable a patch when they try to do another type of a fix. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody just, you know, signed off when they shouldn't have. So you need to go out there and actually scan to say, okay, I've been told that these patches have been applied, but are they working properly to protect my network?
Sure. Okay, Mike Sutton from Spy Dynamics. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you.
Finally this week, it's off to jail for two of the men behind last year's Zotab worm attack. A Moroccan court Tuesday jailed two men for 1 and 2 years for unleashing the computer worms, which disrupted networks across the United States in August 2005. The court convicted 19-year-old science student Farid Essebar and his friend Arkaf Balul for their role in creating and spreading the Zotab worm, according to the Reuters news agency. Moroccan authorities said the two men had one accomplice in Turkey who was named earlier by the FBI as Attila Akiki. Zotab caused computer outages at more than 100 U.S. companies last summer, including major media outlets like CNN and the New York Times. But it did not create widespread havoc like software programs such as SQL Slammer and MyDoom. The Zotab worm had exploited a vulnerability in Microsoft's Plug and Play program, which was patched in the August 2005 Patch Tuesday release. The court sentenced Essebar and Balul to 2 years and 1 year in prison, respectively. The two men's lawyers said they plan to appeal soon. The FBI said close teamwork with Microsoft Corp and authorities in Morocco and Turkey helped net Essebar and Akiki 12 days after the attack. And that's Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest corporate security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. And you can download past episodes of Security Wire Weekly on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Bill Brenner. Thanks for listening.